All right, we're live. We're on page 59 is where I had us leaving off. I hope you all agree. We had just finished talking about credit scores and some of the interesting things. My wife's not here, so I can bag on FICO even more than I did last time. Yeah, but some of that stuff gets really interesting when you talk about what they're going to actually, you know, you get on a web page and you see that all that real estate on the sides is stuff that, how did they know that I was looking at oil filters or, you know, whatever. Now, it's not only your page, it's the credit bureau knows this, and Facebook relationships and statistical correlations with, you guys Millers weren't here. They're actually getting pretty close to using some of that data where if I'm friends with you and you have awful credit, it starts to affect mine, statistically correlated from some of your online stuff. So it gets interesting.
It's once you share your Facebook.
I don't think you have much control over sharing anything.
Well, but there is options there when you say you do not want to share. But if you're into Facebook, they get in there. But for Instagram and some of the others, if you don't say you will share it, then you've got some kind of protection there.
Yeah, maybe.
You better check it too, because, you know.
Yeah.
Oops. How do I say it? There's a lot.
Well, you said I can't use these 10 things, but you didn't say no to the 11th. That means it's okay for this and whatever.
Right.
So
you have to know what options you
give them. It's a full-time job. All right, so now we talked about all the challenges of kind of the credit cycle and credit card stuff. So we're on page 59. What I'd like to do is, like we did before, I'll introduce the topic, and then as a group, we'll read the Bible passage that's in the gray box. And then we'll discuss each one as we go along. So the theme here is that the life of Jesus serves as a spiritual foundation of our attitudes and actions. So, all right, forget about credit, forget about that, forget about FICO scores. Now we're getting spiritual. So the first point says Jesus Christ's life was not distracted from his goal of fulfilling God's love for us. So let's read Hebrews 12 together. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Okay, so let's talk about that. Comments, feedbacks on that one and how this fits? Well, for me, it's just this distraction. I think when people get deep in debt, it's way more than a distraction. But even like last time we talked about, well, what about air mileage cards? What about rebate cards? What about points cards? You know, staying on top of that, I think I told you I've seen a few internet articles where some young people have worked those things to their absolute maximum, to the point where they did a round-the-world trip for nothing by this credit card, that credit card, these flight miles, this double bonus, this triple bonus. What a distraction, right? I mean, how many hours and hours and hours and hours were spent on that? So, you know, there's that. Maybe we move on to the second one. So it says, describe how God's love for us impacts the way we live our lives. So let's read from Titus. For the grace of God that brings salvation teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age while we wait for the blessed hope, the glorious appearing of our God and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify for himself a people that are his very own, eager to do what is good. So how does God's love impact it?
Two things I underline: self-control, so not letting consumerism get the best of us, and then waiting for the blessed hope. So keeping in perspective that it's not all about how far can we get in this world. This is just temporary, and ultimately all we're doing is serving Jesus until he comes back for us.
Just sitting in the waiting room, right? Just sitting in the waiting room right now. Anybody else?
I think the eagerness.
Yeah.
I like that.
A good one. Waiting room analogy.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Third point, financial debt can be an obstacle that entangles people or hinders them in their life in Jesus. Identify actions in the passage below that can help us become free of burdensome debt. So again, Hebrews 12, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. Consider him so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. All right, what are the actions that can help us get free?
Whenever I read that passage, the thing that jumps out, the race marked out for us.
We have the map.
Changes a little bit for time.
Yeah. That's usually when we decide to go off the route that's on the map, but now we got to.
Yeah. And we always get there and it says the bridge is out, right?
Probably not the bridge that was on the map when we're over on this bridge.
That's what I'm saying. We went off on there and the bridge is out. There was a reason we didn't go that way.
Consider him so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I think of any kind of a bad habit, when you're strong, maybe when you're well slept, you can, you know, you kind of have the strength to not fall into that temptation. But when you get tired and weary, that's when you fall into that temptation. Mm-hmm. And consumerism and materialism, and it's constantly
grind.
Tempting us.
What a grind.
And when we're strong in Jesus, consider him, we can fight that. But when we get weak, when our faith is weak, it's a whole lot easier to fall into that temptation and gratify ourselves.
Good one. The other thing I had is just the first two or early words there, throw off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an effort. It's heavy. I mean, sometimes it's like a, you know, backpack. If you were putting another pound in every time you, whatever, then, I mean, it's an effort. You're going to have to make an intentional effort to throw it off. I picked up on that too.
You know, you see people, you hear them going and filing bankruptcy. It's not all bad. The problem is too many of them go in and then restart over the same bad habits and have to do it again. But if it took you to get out of it, to go through that type of situation and stayed out of it, throw it off, then it's all right. But if the problem is, I'll just do it all over again. I've got a guy, this is his fourth bankruptcy.
I'm not a Greek guy, but I would suspect that that might even, depending on the tense or whatever, it might even be one of those, let us keep throwing off, or let us continually keep throwing off kind of a thing, one of those ongoing type of verbs.
Verbs that we don't have in English.
Yeah, it doesn't always translate as much. So. All right, so let's flip the page to page 60. We touched on this the last time, three types of debt choices to eliminate. Level one, level two, level three. Again, reading there, it says a major step in reaching our financial goals is getting out of debt. This action frees your life and releases your income to reach your other goals. Begin with the elimination of level one first, and then go over the long term, go after levels two and three. On the bottom there, it does kind of have a comment, debts that may be considered beneficial, investments with increasing value. So, I don't know, maybe we can just talk through these. Obviously, level one debt is, this talks about the instruments of debt. I think what's not on here that I guess is kind of in the book here. Well, no, I mean a little bit, but there's a little bit of what are you buying with it? And it's ironic, right? Level one debt is credit cards. Super expensive debt. As a matter of fact, I got a taste of this. The stupid bank screwed up the auto payment on the credit card while I was on vacation. And next thing you know, I get the call from the credit card. Hey man, you haven't paid, and what's going on? And they're on it right now, especially in this world. What are you talking about? And so, as it turned out, the bank messed up. But I mean, it was like a $200-something interest charge.
Yeah.
Just gone. I'm like, $200. I could do a lot better things with $200 than pay you. luckily, it all got reversed out and everything. But it was high. It was 19.8% or something. It was ridiculous annual. So there's that. So on the one hand, it's super expensive. And then what do we buy with credit cards? Crap, right? I mean,
I don't know. Airline trips to see the granddaughter isn't all bad.
Got that recorded. Hey,
the three beers you had on the plane with your credit card while you were flying. Well, yeah. No, not you, yeah.
I don't drink, so
that's right.
There.
The
fifth cup of coffee they get mad at.
There you go. But it's just this totally, it tends to be this disposable stuff that doesn't hang around and it's gone, and the cute shoes that I wore twice and the heel broke, or the wristwatch that I bought and then it stops working. It's just, it's kind of, in the end, it ends up being a lot of the crap that's on there. Eating out again and again and again, because I'm being lazy, all those kind of things. Second category is what they call major purchases. So they have automobiles, vacations, appliances, and recreational items. So I guess what's the difference of level one and level two? What do you guys perceive to be the difference?
Not quite as disposable.
Yeah.
Tangible things.
Well, there's a little, not really equity, but there's value, like at least on the automobile, if something were to happen, you could,
It's there, you have something at least, or your washing machine.
That's like vacations, you wouldn't. That's not something you can trade back and say, give me something.
There might be like two levels there. Automobiles and appliances, you could argue, are needs. And to what degree you need to buy that expensive of an automobile or whatever. But the vacations and the recreational items are a little less needs than the other two.
Yeah, the two things I was thinking of is one, the dollar amounts tend to be larger than the $7 Starbucks coffee four times a week or whatever. Those kind of things that we get trapped in. And the interest rates tend to be a little lower, although I'm sure those can get out of control as well. Some of the car ones, you see them 1.9%, 2.9%, whatever. They're not frequent. What's that?
They're not a frequent repetitive
frequency of purchase. That's, yeah.
You buy a stove, you buy something. You buy the new air conditioner. I mean, it breaks the bank for a little bit, but I mean, it's, you're not doing it next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully you got a little better warranty than that on it. But I mean, things like that. I mean, so you got a little bit, where did you say the credit cards? How many people, my son and his wife were horrible at it, use the credit card and don't even think about it. And all of a sudden, they spent $300 or $400 on something and it's garbage. I mean, you could have done something better with it.
Yep. That goes back to the two credit card rules. Do you guys remember them?
Yep.
Somebody tell me them then. Sure. From page 58.
Cut them up and don't use them.
No, if it's a planned purchases you were going to do anyway, that's okay.
And pay it off.
And if you don't do either of those two, get them out of here. So that's about level two. Level three is investment purchases. And there we can talk about home mortgage, education, and business expenses. Comments on that? What makes those different?
I'll go with the business. I mean, Tom, you've done one. I've started a business. Most businesses don't make it 5 years, so I don't know if it's a great investment.
Well, your attitude going in that I'm putting money forth to get a return.
You expect something, yeah. Not too many people expect their car to go up in value in the next 3 or 4 years, right? So.
It goes down in value when you drive it off the lot.
Yeah. Yep.
You expect the home. I mean, what do we say? It's like the Ibbotson chart of that. If Ibbotson chart is the stock market chart you see that goes up and down. It goes up over a long period, but never straight up. It's up and down.
It's not linear.
The home mortgage and good. Mine was up over 500,000, the thing crashed, now it's, you know, maybe back up into the fours again. I mean, so, you know, you're going up and down on it. I'm still well ahead. I mean, but that's
yeah,
all,
but I mean, so. Definitely you guys are right. The category is that you, yeah. You're expecting,
you return
it's an investment, you're expecting to get more than what you put in.
Education's questionable.
Yeah, that one, we talked a little bit about that last time, and it's good we have some students with us, but the number of people that I see coming out, you know, medical doctor, that was always the one, right? Medical doctor, or maybe, not even an attorney, mainly medical doctors, just the intensity of their hours, the intensity of study, the cost of medical school, that you'd, for years and years and years, there was an expectation that, that you do that, but there was a pretty clear path to what you'd kind of recoup in your income within a pretty, you know, short time. You know, this, and, you know, I think this is 2008? Yeah, 2008 at the bottom here. I wonder if things hadn't even exploded on the student debt front quite as much as they are now. The number of people I know that have got six-figure debt, $100,000 debt for a, and it's not a medical degree.
Yeah.
It's a just a common everyday, whatever, some business degree, some something like that, is staggering. And I think that's what we talked about last time. It goes beyond the cost of school and books and tuition. People are just giving away candy. So yeah, I'll pay my rent with it. I'll do this, that, and it kind of really pile up on you. So, you know, there's that. And then you see like a man and a woman each bring their 100 grand and they get married. That's a real boat anchor. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm not there yet. I've got a couple more years before I get one in college. But I don't know, maybe some of you guys that are, have been there, done that. What's the advice? Do you, you know, they may not even ask parents a lot of times. Some of these, you know, you were talking about the one that was living the good life, did loan after loan after loan. I don't know if that young lady had to get her parents to sign off on it, or they knew or not. But
some of them don't these days. No, they
how are you? How are you guys? What are you guys seeing? Those of you. And she's using it to, she bought a house? Yeah, that was the
she
cop thing, right?
She bought a house
right?
in the Carolinas, and now she bought a house in Seattle. I mean, she has just run under the radar. Like, she's a great girl, but just a little bit when it comes to finances.
Well, one of the things, and we're working with our grandchildren, and our children are coming to us and talking about it, because they've realized this. And one of the things that one of my sons strongly suggested to his children was, you think about what your end goal is and how you can best meet that financially. Maybe it's going to be taking undergraduate courses at a local college, and maybe it's going to be doing some online stuff that possibly you can afford. We talked about that, didn't we? Maybe it's going to be taking a couple of semesters off to work and save every penny so that you can go for next year. With me, I went to college for 21 years, and it was because financially I couldn't lay out the money. So as I would move up the ladder in the field that I wanted and the field that I was best at, then they would pay for my education as long as I kept my grade points up. So there's options.
Yeah.
Apply for scholarships.
Yeah.
There's an option there, grants that you can pay.
And there are a lot of scholarships that are just out there that are totally unused because nobody ever applies for them.
That's true.
It's a good one, Kaisa.
My coworker's daughter went away to college a couple years ago, and they were really unsure of how to go about this. You know, they actually had the means to pay for the education for their child, but they also didn't want to just gift it to them.
Yeah.
So they basically put out a loan in her name, and they told her that if she managed the money correctly, and they had a very specific way of how they were doing it, and if she kept her grades up and stayed in school and stayed the course, that kind of thing, then the parents would take on the loan after she graduated, but not unless everything was met to the agreement. And I think she's going into her fourth year now, and they just have seen her be much more frugal with things because, well, I could go to this, you know, vacation in the summer, but that's going to have to come out of my money. That, and if I do that, then I won't have enough for that, you know. So I don't know. I just I
That's the school is your job kind of approach, and I'm going to pay you for it. Yeah.
But you know, there was a finite amount of money, and once that money was gone, then she was going to have to figure out a different way. Parents weren't going to be just continuing to dish things out, you know. So
good.
And there was a responsible side of it, so I liked it.
Matt.
Something that hasn't been talked about, and I'm kind of old school, and I don't want to offend anybody because some of us have teenagers in the room. Not some of us. I don't have a teenager yet, but so on the one hand, I realize maybe back, I basically worked my way through college and got through it without any debt. But I also understand that even since then, just 15 years ago, the college tuition has snowballed, and I don't think I could work my way through college without any debt today, no matter how hard I worked, no matter how great I had construction jobs and well-paying jobs and whatnot. But on my list of books to read is one that my dad just finished called The Vanishing American Adult. And I think one thing that comes into play is just the sense of teenagers working, even if they can't pay their way through college, just getting after it and not viewing their high school and college years as just a continued time to goof off while mom and dad pay for everything. I can remember, you know, and granted, preaching to the choir, and we're probably all more or less in the same boat here, but washing dishes in a restaurant at 14 years old and starting to pay for clothes and things and just developing that sense of ownership of some aspects of my life and earning money to provide, even for myself, even though I was under my parents' roof still. So I think that's something we got to get back to, too, is just roll up your sleeves and work.
Thank you. That's getting harder and harder for young people to get jobs. I've started watching. Seattle can't understand why they can't get young people working. At $15 an hour, they're not hiring the $15 an hour dishwasher. You know what I'm saying? The guy said, I'll buy a bigger machine in there, and I'll use it over and over again. I mean, so we're not... That's unfortunate. I mean, I'll go back way longer. It went up to $1.25 minimum wage. And I went to work at New England Life, and they made me an offer. I could work up in the agency department handling papers over the summer for $2.75 an hour. I could clean out the sewer traps down in the basement. I took the sewer traps. It's a whole lot more money. I didn't have to work as much after. It was miserable, dirty work. Made me want to graduate a whole lot more.
Yeah, this is the skin in the game concept. Like Kelly and I, that's what we've said. We've been fortunate enough, and our folks have set up a little bit of funding for our kids and stuff, but this is not just like you turn on the water and out comes money. It's you got to have some skin in the game here. You need 50.0% of this is you, and 50%, you know, that's not the point. It's just skin in the game. Yeah. There was another hand. Yeah, Jen.
I can't remember if I said this or not, but I used to follow and kind of watch Susie Orman a lot. And, you know, and she said growing up, you know, her parents did not, weren't going to have the money to put her through college. And so her parents basically said, if you want to go to college, you go locally. You know, and we all know, you know, she became very successful and made a lot of money and all that. But as an adult, when it comes to that kind of stuff, you have to take care of you first, because now you're at a certain age and you only have so much time to bring so much income in and to retire someday. And your kids have a lot of time, so they need to do it smart if you can't fund them to go anywhere they want, but they should go locally, they should work, you know, and it creates responsible young people that will grow into responsible adults. But you shouldn't beat yourself up or go into debt or take out a second on your home to put your kid through school. You know, if you can't do it, they can figure out how to do it with loans and, you know,
you're right. And what Pam said is you start to see that a little bit. Not everybody has to be age 22 or 23 with a diploma from a university. Maybe it takes you a while. Yeah, maybe you're doing some whatever jobs, working construction in the summer, grabbing that second job. And maybe you're 28 when you really finally get that degree. But man, that sucker, you're not letting go. It's got some dirt on your hands to get that thing. So,
but you'll respect it, you'll honor, you'll want it, and you'll be willing to go on beyond. You've learned more in that working on the side than you did in the education. I mean, pardon me, those classes were a flying loop at times. You know, I mean, I got some of those professors that I wonder what world they lived in most of the time. Pardon me.
All right, let's move on to page 61. Preparation for debt elimination. So, number one, how you got there, and that's not a fun admission, right? It's, you know, and sometimes there are. I mean, yeah, there can definitely be circumstances of, we talked about a real drastic medical situation or a family situation or something like that. Sometimes it's, you can be kind of doing the right stuff and it gets dropped in your lap. But I mean, most of the time, I think it's our own kind of lapses that got us there. A spending plan, creating a spending plan and sticking to it. We covered that already. And yeah, that stinks because you don't get all the fun stuff and you got to take care of what you need to take care of and save. Establishing an emergency fund. We've talked about this. I don't know if $1,000 is right or not.
That just is initial.
It's something. It's something. It's a number to start with. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many. I'm lucky enough. I usually take care of my own car stuff, but I don't know when that car thing drops in your lap. Is $1,000 enough? Yeah. Often not. It's probably two, right?
So.
Yeah, I suppose. Changing your spending habits to make more money available for accelerator payments. And yeah, here's another one. This is one that my observation with young people is really interesting, but selling off some assets or increasing the income if necessary. The way that people just buy and sell things all over the place, just, what was it? I have a brother-in-law, he's much younger, and he was trying to get into vineyards and winemaking and all that. And he was constantly selling this equipment, selling that, selling books, selling this, selling. It was just a really interesting thing that his life was like one big online garage sale, buying and selling. But you know, just again, you know, depending on your what your mind is and where you are generationally and all that, some people aren't like that. But it seems more positive. And then the other thing, and this was a question we had asked ourselves. I guess we'll ask it again here under number five. Increasing your income. If you find yourself that, I don't know, what's the case? Maybe it's that here's the guy and here's the man and the woman. Each of them brings $100,000 into a marriage. Should they actually, maybe before they start having kids, should both of them have a second job in the evening for a while until they get this under control and put off having kids? It starts getting sticky issues, but or better yet, maybe there's man and woman and baby. Should the man be working if he needs to? Should he be working in the evenings to get that debt gone, even if it means you're taking some time away from the family? These are awful situations people find themselves in. But what's the way out, Tom?
Well, unfortunately, in today's society, especially in California, both the husband and wife just about have to work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very real situation coming up here in St. Mark's. Pastor Carl Lander is coming, and we know that we don't pay our call workers code yet.
We do.
We are in code now.
Yeah, we're there.
We're in the right code. But a lot of churches pay well above code. And his wife is working in the Senate office. So my plea to you guys is she works in finance, and she needs to get a job. That's kind of a bad way of saying it.
No.
She would like to get employment here locally, so I'm going to be tapping people.
She has a degree in accounting.
I don't know that.
I've already asked them, because I'm trying to find them work.
We'll get the resume. She needs to get her resume. We can start floating that around.
I'm just saying that a lot of people, when you talk about having children, what do you do with the children? You send them to daycare. Now is the daycare costing as much as a wife is making? In a lot of cases, it's very close to that. So, yeah, it's a real challenge. And if you don't do that, and just a husband's working or at a job that's not paying over six figures, you're probably living close to poverty, unfortunately, in California.
Yeah, it's true. So, I mean, again, at what point, it's best not to get there. But then how serious do you, I mean, do you know, literally no more eating out, period, no vacation? Does it mean we are not taking a vacation for 8 years, period? I mean, yeah, that's harsh, but...
There's so many fun things you can do, though, that doesn't...
Staycations?
Yeah. Well, maybe not that. Yeah, you could go camping, you know, picnicking. You could trade houses with friends. I mean, there's so many things that you could come up with.
Yard work. Very fun.
I want to
build a she shed together. So anyway, I guess we didn't really answer it, but you sure hate to put yourself in that situation of, okay, me and my wife, and we got a baby at home, and the baby's really little, needs mom a lot. Am I morally obligated that I really should be looking at getting a second job, even if it's just cashiering at Target or working at Home Depot or stocking shelves? Should I really be doing that at least 2-3 nights a week? I don't know.
Mowing lawns?
I don't know. Yeah.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever. Yeah. I think that's probably the answer, is it's kind of a whatever it takes type thing. So, all right. other debt elimination. Oops. Sorry, I'm falling behind here. I love this one. Other debt elimination considerations. Shame on all of us. We didn't. Oh, sorry, Frank.
I just have a question. In the box where it says avoid using the debt consolidation company.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Why is that a bad thing?
I think it usually debt. I'm glad you bring it up. Thank you. What the author says, and what I've seen a little bit in my own experience, is debt consolidation is usually trading one loan, three loans for another loan.
But doesn't that reduce then your monthly outgo if you just have one?
It could, but whoever's doing that debt consolidation, there's something in it for them. There's almost always something hidden that there'll be something like a balloon payment that you didn't really understand about. Or... there'll be something about, you owe us this, and it wasn't really in the monthly. It's shady.
They'll tell you that we'll lower your debt by 62%, and we're going to put on 48% more onto you with our fees, so you're back almost to where you are.
Yeah.
Well, the danger, too, that we talked about is people that do that and are not disciplined.
Yeah.
And now they have an extra $300 or $400 a month, and then they end up spending that.
Yeah.
So it's not really achieving a purpose. What I got from that was, if people are real disciplined and they want to pay that off, I think that's probably an avenue of doing it. But a lot of people that do it, then they get extra monies, and then now they're spending that money on top of it. So,
yeah. Thanks, Tom.
And Fran, I'm glad that some people are saying this now. Your debtors will work with you. They don't want you to declare bankruptcy.
That's coming up. You're right. That's coming up, and you're right. You're right about that. All right. So, again, other debt elimination. So, again, this is the thing. Credit counseling versus debt elimination versus consolidation. The names. It's sneaky. But anyway, other debt elimination considerations. One, give more to God. Obvious. No, none of us thought this or said this. Well, think about, how do I make more money? How do I get more money? How do I cut things? How do I pay it off? No, give more to God. That's the answer. What? But it is. It's step one. It's step zero. Take care of, do things, to the roadmap. Stay on the road, and it always, always, always is the right thing to do. It may not get your debt paid off a year faster than some other way, but boy, you're going to probably be at peace while you do it. And there's so many other blessings that are going to come from that. Second point: stop now. Yesterday. Using any credit cards or purchasing anything on credit. And that's Tom's point of, the minute you get a raise at work, don't just, buy more garbage or whatever. Third one, place a stake in the ground and make a commitment to God and self. No more debt. So you know, making a commitment. Commitments are, I mean, we get all cultural about this. Commitments are pretty cheap these days. Just look at, you know, whether it's any promises, marriage commitments, debt commitments, this commitment, that commitment, they're cheap these days. But how do you know more debt? And I think part of that commitment probably goes back to things we talked about before about having a way to hold yourself accountable by someone that's not you, whether it's a parent or a brother, sister, or a close friend. You know, you have to, I think it was Ellie was talking about dad had to review those books every month or whatever it was. Something like that, some kind of an accountability mechanism. Now, PAMS, consider negotiating with credit card companies. And that's where you get this, it's not debt consolidation, it's debt counseling, maybe that. Those are almost always, I know one of the things, I think it said it in here, if it didn't, I saw it somewhere else. If they're a not-for-profit versus a profit company, that can sometimes do it. It's a governmental, non-governmental, some of those things might be flags. Tom?
What I do just about every year is I negotiate with DirecTV. I called DirecTV and said, discontinue my service, I can't afford it anymore. And you'd be surprised how...
what they come up with.
But they might be catching on to me because I do it just about every year.
You had a Dish Direct. Yeah. I mean, that's a funny one, but this one may hit closer to home. My understanding is that you should be shopping your home insurance and car insurance every other year.
Yes. Yeah.
And because you know what? I mean, the sad fact, oh, but we're loyalty discounts and we this. And our call center, when you get in an accident, is so much better than their calls. A lot of times it's the same people. The red line's from the king. Red insurance company, then 5 minutes later, oh, I'm green insurance. Same people in the same call center sometimes.
Well, Allstate wants half of the world
now. Yeah, yeah.
Insurance and everything. So.
Yeah, so they're just selling, there's Ford, Lincoln, Mercury. It's all, you know.
But
so.
That's true. One of our members just went through this, and they saved several hundred dollars a year. They've been with one company for a long time, and I suggested that was not a good company. I had bad experience, not just because, but they changed and they saved several hundred dollars.
It's one of those things, investing a few hours will get you there. Yeah, if you have, I know every year we have a miles one, and you call up and go, you know, I don't, time to pay the $90 annual fee. I'm not doing it. You know, it's too hard to book flights and everything. Well, we'll make it $25. All right, I'll give it another year.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it.
I understand. I don't know. Maybe some have worked in retail, but I had. There was my roommate's girlfriend. She worked at Nordstrom's for many, many years, and she said every single sales associate is authorized to give at Nordstrom 20% off without asking their manager. So that's not exactly credit, but it's just. Negotiate a little.
How about an insurance broker using them?
Sometimes, yeah, maybe they're doing it 10 times a day.
They're obviously shopping it every year, unless you ask them to do that. But when we moved a few years ago, I changed insurance companies because our former insurance wasn't moving quick enough to get into the house. So I went with this broker that was recommended by our sales or real estate agent. And I haven't paid any fees to them, but they've been apparently, you know, shopping to whatever best insurance. I don't know if it always works that way or not.
You should. I can tell you, in our agency, it does. That's the first thing we do. 2 months prior to renewal, we go through the thing and look at all the companies we have. And then we've even recommended to some people to go to a different company that we don't carry, because it would be much better for them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess realizing every one of those brokers, they get paid not by you, they get paid by bringing somebody a customer, they get paid. So I guess once you know the rules and who's paying who what, and if you believe they're honest, then yeah, and they're not just, his rates aren't going to go up much, and I'm going to get a sweet $500 every person I kicker from, you know, Red Insurance, then that's a dishonest broker, I guess. But yeah. But yeah, it seems like it's a reasonable thing to do. All right. The final one is work on eliminating the debt, not consolidating. That was a great question earlier. I mean, I think there's the distinction. Designing a debt elimination repayment plan. We went through that with the table that we worked on last time. Adjusting your lifestyle. Oh, nobody likes that. And then seeking an encourager. And yeah, that encourager needs to have equal parts arm around the shoulder and foot in the tail, I guess, right? So, I love this, Dad. Don't even buy that. Those little mnemonics sometimes.
But it's on sale.
Do you know how much money I saved? Sure looks to me like you spent $300, but okay. Yeah. Okay, so then let's jump. I think this stuff we can jump pretty quickly through level one and level two. That's where the authors here are clearly drawing the line. You got level two, level one, level two, then you got level three. So again, I think we can scoot through this really, really fast. No new debts. List it. Make yourself look at it. Tack it up on your mirror, whatever. What is the accelerator payment? And again, we covered that the last time. That's by not paying the first one. Once it's gone, use that same thing as though you were still paying it, put it on the second one. And so what does the guy call it, the radio guy? Snowballing. Yeah. Again, pay the smallest one first and, you know, have a little party. Don't spend any money having the party, but yeah, have a little party.
Drink water.
Yeah.
Sometimes
cheap champagne.
Sometimes it's not smartest to do the smallest one first because you might have something with a higher interest rate and you want to pay out first too. Right?
Could be. There's a balance there, but if we go back through it, I'm wondering what page that was on. It may even be an appendices where it shows it. There actually is something to paying off the smallest one first.
Well, and then having those small victories gives you kind of the momentum to get to the bigger ones. So
knocking crap out. Yeah.
Then you take that payment and throw it against the bigger one.
Yeah.
So seeing those bills going away is what gets you excited about.
That being said, paying off the 5% and just knowing that 20% one is racking up, I hear you.
Yeah.
So. Again, this is the snowballing. This is rolling the full amount into the next debt, not like, oh, I paid off three credit cards, and that's you know, like $400 or $500 a month I don't have anymore. I'm going to take like 100 for me. No, zero for you until it's done. No, soup for you. then go after your level two debt. And that's, again, more like the cars, the major appliances, those kind of things that are, to use Matt's term, starting to border up against needs. The accelerator amounts. Well, I guess we, I think we went through most of this. We get this. So then, this is where it is. It's page 133 and 134 in the back. These show, I thought we had gone through this. So 133 is the example. And let's take a minute on that. This is that, that's that accelerator payment. In this case, they did choose a pretty high one. JCPenney was sitting at 18%. And there's your accelerator. It's $400. The minute you get that gone, it just rolls and it rolls. And every time it's 400 plus bigger as you go to the right. Step one, two, those are the rightmost columns. 1 month, 2 months, 5 months, 1 year, 2 years. You just see how it starts really stacking up. That $400 pretty quickly becomes $800 at the end of the year there, what you're able to put towards more stuff. So that's kind of how that works. We can look at it. Probably on our own. But yeah, this kind of justifies that snowballing thing, and it does seem to work. Let's see.
I was going back to Matt's reading the book. I think I'm out of touch except, you know, with grandkids. I think the generation coming up is used to instant gratification. And for them to make a commitment like this, it's going to be very, very difficult. And so a mediator or maybe, you know, an intermittent plan or the gratifications, the short gratifications of help, or training them as parents now to understand if you want that, you're going to have to put this much, like, this much away. I think it's very hard when you tell them it's going to take 2 years to pay this off.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
It takes 2 years to charge it.
I'll tell you another thing that you didn't list in yours is letting them hit a wall. When they're young, that's painful. I don't know. I mean, with my own kids, I don't know. I like to sit here. Oh, I would do this and that. You know, I mean, it's easy to sit here and say, but is that the other one of? All right, let's rack up $2,500 in credit card debt, and you hit the wall. I'm not helping you. What do you want? I mean, I got a lot of yard work, $100 a day. Yeah, your issue, not mine. I mean, but the credit cards are calling and this and that, and my credit's gonna. I love you so much. You're gonna hurt here. I don't know where that falls. And like I said, it's easy for me because I'm not in the situation to sit here and preach to everybody. But
you'll get to situations. I remember Greg when he got accepted to medical school. Sat there and he got the bill. Comes in and he says $42,500. He goes, that's not bad for 4 years. I said, son, that's the first year. Oh, you know, I'm not going. I said, you're gonna go. We'll find a way. He went down and joined the Navy and had them pay for it. All 6'10" of him, but he got in the Navy and it helped to pay for it. It doesn't cover all, but I mean, I want this. I said, but you're gonna have, he figured, I have to give him this much time, but he's now debt free. And that's a big difference. I mean, he's got one of his friends that's an anesthesiologist that still has over $170,000 10 years later in debt. Okay.
Skin so. In the game. Yeah. I imagine the Navy took a little skin from him.
Two trips to the Gulf, okay?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, no, I mean, I shouldn't be lying. I shouldn't make it trite, but yeah. But, Matt.
I'm just thinking, too, as I'm hearing people talk, the importance of teaching kids actively. Like, you know, those of us with spreadsheets, letting them see that spreadsheet, how we pay the bills and how it all fits together. And not just assume that because they're under our roof, they're learning how to make good choices.
It's not always osmosis, yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it's our own kids. I mean, they have not always had that discipline. I love my daughter-in-law dearly, but, you know, if the credit card still has got a balance on it, she's going to buy something. And it drives me, you know, ballistic.
The other thing that I...
We were playing Monopoly, too. Remember? We had the money, and we had to see, and then all of a sudden you're going...
Yeah.
He's got more hotels than I do.
That's okay. I'm bankrupt. I'll just get to the next game. No, that's not the lesson.
You know? I mean, isn't that funny? But just... Like stupid Monopoly.
The other thing that strikes me is that, so my daughter's, what, 15 and my son is 12. They're of an age now where they can understand it. Well, now we don't maybe struggle as much as we did a while ago when they should have seen it. But to your point, I mean, yeah.
Well,
I just think there's all this proactive, teach them, show them. They're going to do what they're going to do, and maybe they need to, life can be a hard teacher sometimes.
I think my kids ask me all the time, well, could we buy this? Well, we could, you know. So you can afford it? Yeah, I can afford it. Can we buy it?
No.
No. You know, and I don't know, I'd just be pretty honest with them about it, you know. And oftentimes I don't even offer them to buy with their own money because I know it's junk and, you know, but sometimes, you know, you might say, okay, well, if that's something you want, you know, but we've probably been pretty good about so far, and we're talking little things, but I think it starts with little.
It does.
If that's what you want, then you're going to have to work for it, you know. You don't have enough in your, well, go home and count your they have a, the spend, save, you know.
Spreadsheet? I think it's spreadsheet.
No, in their piggy bank, it has the four different areas.
Yeah.
Spend, save, and invest, actually. And so take out your spend one and see how much money you have in there, you know, and it's not enough.
But you just nailed it, too. when you put it back on them and say, you could buy it, and you maybe they have enough to buy it, the number of times that they draw the conclusion themselves that that's not worth spending my money on, I'll happily spend mom and dad's money, but so they a lot of times will make the right decision.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think for little kids, we're past that. I mean, when my kids were really little, I hope this wasn't recently, but I remember, my memory isn't always good, but well, just go to the machine and get the money. Yeah. That's, you know, or just, really? That's how you think it works? Shame on me, right?
So, well, even something as little as like PlayStation when my kids were little, they wanted one. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to get one. Yeah. You know, I could afford it. We could afford a lot of things, but I'm like, no, we're not going to get that, you know, and everybody else had one, and I'm like, well, you can go play it at their house.
Being firm is important. I agree with you, Frank.
Well, and like I said, sometimes when they have to spend their own money, and you know that it's junk, and they have to spend their money for it, and they get it home, and they think, oh, this wasn't such a cool thing anyway. They kind of learn a lesson there, too.
Or it's heartbreaking when you see them.
Or not. My son, he's spending on crap for the next crap.
And they move it, and it's broken.
Or they don't use it like 2 days afterwards.
It doesn't do what they think it's going to do when they get it home. And yeah. And Alyssa, the four-year-old, she says when she wants to get something, she'll say, Nana, can you buy this? And we'll say, no, I don't have any money. And she'll say, well, can't you go buy some?
Yeah. Well, and I think you quickly will learn the character of your kids.
Yeah.
Some are savers, some are spenders. I've heard from different of you citing your kids like, oh, if I gave Fran $80, she'd never spend, you know, whatever. And some other kid, you gave him $80, you'd be gone. Oh. So you start to learn the inclination of your kids.
I would take the 80, put it in the savings, and say, Dad, you've got to buy this. You know, but he used to say, life isn't fair. And I used to say, you're right. Life ain't fair.
Glad you learned that now, my friend.
Yeah, might as well, yeah. And that's hard to learn for some of them when they run into those problems. Life isn't fair. Yeah.
Dad did a really good thing. Like he knew that I was the saver, and my sister, when she was younger, was a spender, and he knew he needed to curb that, but he knew he had to do it carefully. And so it was like prom and high school, and my dad gave me $100. I'm like, Dad, I don't need $100. Just take it, just in case, you know, whatever. And I'm like, this is burning a hole. I did not feel comfortable having that much money. I didn't like it, you know. So when I brought it back, I had all the receipts, and I brought him like, you know, $83 and whatever cents. And this is what I spent it on and all this type of stuff, you know. And I said, Mom, don't ever give me that much money. I don't want that much money, you know. And he's like, I know you could take care of it, you know. So then when my sister goes to prom, so she sees this whole thing. So then she goes to prom, she's like, Dad, can I have $100?
Yep.
And he goes, no, why don't you go ahead and use your money for whatever you would like to purchase, you know. And
okay,
then bring me the receipts, and then if I feel like it was a worthy purchase, I'll reimburse you for it.
Smart.
And so he had two totally different ways of treating both of us. And even though at a young age, my sister didn't think that was fair at all, I mean, she's obviously, you know, she's doing really well
figured
now,
it out,
and she got over that. So
I don't know, got to the same.
Good stories, but I think, I think identifying what flavor of child you have is important. All right, why don't we wrap it up on page 64? There's some Bible verses we can bring it home with that, and then and we'll be done. So we'll do the same thing before. God demonstrated His love by taking our place. So Romans 5. You see, at just the right time, when we were powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. God demonstrates His own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So I guess we hit the wall, right, to use our past one spiritually. God credits us as paid up and in good standing with Him by faith.
Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. To the man who trusts God, who justifies the wicked, his faith is credited as righteousness.
Christ's love compels me to see life differently. For Christ's love compels us, because we are convinced He died for all,
and those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for Him who died for them and was raised again.
God will provide what we really need on a daily basis.
Keep your lives free from the love of money, and be content with what you have. Because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me?
The debt he forgives empowers us to forgive others.
Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you.
Okay, so that's it. We will crank up session 4 about being wise with our money. Now that our debts are all out of here and we have some money, what do we do with it? All right, see you guys next week.